Good morning. It's me. Can you hear me?
You're listening to Nighttime Daydreams with DJ Kalan K on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on and then you tune in and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more, and more, and more, and more.
Alone in Supernature, or Supernatura. Alone in Cabana Supernatura. Here we go. Lago Agrio, Sour Lake, is named after the town in Texas where Texaco was born. Lago is an oil town, a weird blend of rainforest and industry, redolent of burning plastic, rotting vegetables, fresh fruit, diesel, fried potatoes, and fish soup with a squeeze of lime. Sometimes macaws or parrots fly overhead. The markets are full of cheap goods from China. But let's talk about the rainbow serpent, the spirit of the ayahuasca vine. People see it in visions a lot. That's one of the first things I read about ayahuasca as a teenager. Later, the second time I drank with Joaquin, it appeared to me, 20 meters long, made of glowing, multicolored vines, floating over the trees. You can see paintings of the rainbow serpent in Pablo Amaringo's Ayahuasca Visions. You can read about it in Jeremy Narby's The Cosmic Serpent. It was there in the hut where Narby first drank the brew. When he had to go outside to puke, he matter-of-factly excused himself for stepping over it. Recently, at Cocaya, Rufino told us the weird story of how it started out as a hair on a shaman's head and was transformed by magic into a being that could kill the jaguar goddess. Did that luminous apparition I saw start out as a hare? It shows up in lots of people's minds. Are those images connected? Are they projected from a central source? Is there a rainbow serpent? Or is too strong a word? My Western brain gnaws at these questions. Because my sculptor buddy Elias accidentally left his inks in Quito, I'm not getting a tattoo now. He doesn't know how to draw a nine-pointed star anyway, so I'm waiting for an encebollado at Los Tucanos restaurant. Encebollado is a soup of tuna, yuca, tomatoes, onions, cilantro, chili pepper, fried plantain chips, and lime juice. I am in love with encebollado. Encebollado, you are as good as a tattoo. You are as good as figuring out the mystery of the rainbow serpent would be. Waiting for my encebollado, I flip back and forth between my notebook and Sophie's Choice by William Styron. Did I mention that books are spaceships, time machines, multipliers of identity? Did I mention that human minds are rainbow serpents gliding among the worlds we inhabit? Yesterday, pardon me, my encebollado is here. I ran into Martin, Rufino's wife Katya's youngest brother, who lives across the river from Joaquin and us, and who cut the floorboards for the house we're building. Martin is very strong, and according to Joaquin, has a reputation for being unstable and a brawler. Joaquin adds that Martin beat his wife and she committed suicide. Last month, Dave suggested inviting Martin to drink yahe with us, but Joaquin said no because Martin could go crazy during the ceremony and we wouldn't be able to handle him. In person, though, Martin was friendly and relaxed. He and I sauntered around Lago, checking out women and talking about life, the universe, and everything. I didn't ask what happened between him and his wife, and he didn't volunteer any information. I did ask him if he'd tried Yahe. He said, oh, I drank it once with my uncle Alberto across the border in Peru. In the morning, we went down and washed our faces in the river. Then he said, I'm going to visit some friends of mine. He walked right into the river and didn't come up. 2 hours later, he came back out completely dry. No way. For real, I saw the whole thing. How did he get to Peru? This Peruvian Sequoia called Rodrigo Levy once told me he had to go through Colombia to come here. I went through Colombia too, Martin said, without papers. On my way to the Sequoia communities in Peru, I came across 5 Peruvian military checkpoints. The first 4 let me by, no problem. But at the 5th one, they said I was a spy. Whoa. They beat me up and held my head underwater, so I nearly drowned. Fuck. Then they left me in a pit for 3 days. At the end of that, they decided I wasn't a spy and let me go. The next day, I reached my uncle's house. We drank yahe, and he visited his friends under the river. We drifted back to the Fondo Ecuatoriano Populorum Progresio, a Catholic organization where we were both staying. Martin wanted to smoke a smidgen of Huatimunto, spirit tobacco that he had, but he had no pipe or rolling paper. Bringing my superior Western scientific knowledge to the Third World, I showed him how to work the tobacco out of a cigarette and pack in the pot. He and I went up to the top floor, which was open to the air so he could smoke it. A skinny black guy in a single room looked out as we passed. I got an intuition he knew why we'd gone up there and would want some of the green. Martin didn't want to share it with him, though, and smoked quickly and hid the roach. When the guy came out asking if we had mota, Martin maintained, against all logic and in the face of skeptical questioning, that we'd just gone up there for the view. In fact, it was a great view, and the sunset flooded the town with a million shades of orange. Zafiro proved to be excellent company. He accepted Martin's lie and told us he was in town from the coast, visiting relatives. We all decided to take a walk together and went downstairs and strolled the town like the united colors of Benetton. We hit the amusement park. Zafiro and I went on a Ferris wheel that I'd been eyeing since it arrived in town a few months ago. Martin found it too intimidating, despite our encouragement and then our disparaging comments about his manliness. The ride was exhilarating. Zafiro and I were lifted up above the damp jungle city in the darkness and saw, far off in the west, toward the Andes, a bank of massive storm clouds lit up by lightning. After Zafiro and I had gone twice, Martin wanted to go on it with us, but we said, no, man, go on it yourself. We've spent enough money already, unless you want to pay our way. I rode back down the Aguarico River to Cabaña Supernatura yesterday in a motor canoe with Rufino and Martin, who jumped out on the opposite bank, and 11 tourists from Quebec. I have a swollen, infected mosquito bite on my right inner thigh, a souvenir of the night raid at Cocaya. Rufino is taking care of his tourists in the cabaña, and I get some time alone. The provisional hut we used to stay in is broken down now. Draped over beams, Gus's and Mark's and David's and my discarded clothes harbor little wasp nests. Relics from that time, Dave's cap, Ryder's sunblock, a box of dry goods infested with bugs. The Swarovski crystal is missing from the western roof beam. The cows still come around. I had to drive some away, just like in the old days. I'm staying in the hut we're building, sleeping under the part of the roof that's finished. Rufino's wife, Katya, son, Macias, and baby, Miguelito, are in the family hut nearby. Only they and Rufino are around here now. Joaquin and Maribel are visiting Dave at his apartment in Banyos. I just bathed in the river. Tomorrow I'll wash my clothes. I finished Sophie's Choice with a lump in my throat. I hear black Quaquillo and tan and white Potente barking to chase away cows, and Miguelito crying. A crystalline vibratory drone of insects, and the call of a certain frog that starts up a fast, rhythmic series of hoes and gradually slows them down until they're coming 3 seconds apart, then stops. And a bug suicide in my candle flame. It's 7:22. Yes, Sophie's Choice is a sad book. This copy makes me especially sad because Ricky's hands touched it, put it in the box to mail to me. I remember those hands exploring my body, which they never will again. Are bodies haunted by hands, like houses by ghosts? The dogs are barking furiously. Even my thin blanket is too hot for the thick air. Bugs are a constant bother. The heat of the blanket makes the bug bites worse, but no blanket will mean more bites. I didn't dine with the tourists last night. Didn't want to invite myself over to eat their food. Rufino told me this morning everyone had wondered where I was. Nobody invited me, though, and I munched the bread and cheese of solitude. It's less comfortable to write now. A wasp came and extinguished one of my 2 candle flames by diving into it, then writhed on the floor in ecstatic agony. I lit my lighter off the remaining candle, relit the extinguished one, and burned the wasp to death, which was a moral failing, I think now. I burned my thumb in the process. My unconscious was punishing me, or the wasp was fighting me at the level of the collective unconscious. Or I'm just dumb. Man is a theory-making animal, and these are my theories. Bug bite bugged and sleepless, blister thumbed. It's 3:15 a.m. I was just dreaming I was at the Natural History Museum again. An animated diorama showed how ducks and duck-billed platypuses meet once a year in hidden tunnels and caves deep underground to mate and exchange genes. I awoke to nagging bug bites and the swollen infection on my inner thigh. It's demanding in its insistence that no pressure be applied to it, that it not even be touched. Earlier, a cow invaded, and I drove her away by shining my light in her eyes and saying, "Chht!" Later, there came a sound like a wildcat killing a chicken nearby. Now, bats are flinging themselves headlong through the air in search of food. Chaos embodied in their hunting paths, embroidered in their hunting clothes. The night is dark and moonless, the stars dim and distant through webs of mist. Thinking about how to teach English in San Pablo, I have no books. It's all going to have to come out of my head. But that's okay. Language doesn't weigh anything and can be transported anywhere at no cost. What I've got to do today: wash my clothes, boil stream water to drink, as there's no rainwater these dry days, haul up a big pot of water to wash my dishes, hopefully not water with minnows in it like last time, instant coffee and animal crackers for breakfast, rice and beans for dinner, bananas in between, tomato cherries too, those small sweet red fruits are in season now. I was bitten about 60 times that night in Cocaya. It's 8:15 a.m. now, 8 days later. Like settlers, like colonists, like the oil industry, the bites have no intention of going away. daytime, and I'm alone in Cabaña Supernatura. Toucans shriek in counterpoint to the aqueous blooping of oropendulas. The sun shines on shiny leaves. A small ant explores the tabletop and is brushed away mercilessly. The human has little patience for ants, since he discovered them infesting his crackers and cookies this morning. The surface of his black coffee wriggles with the motion of his writing hand on the wooden table. A yellow butterfly trips through the air. The surface of the coffee is Tezcatlipoca's obsidian mirror, reflecting the palm fronds of the underside of the roof as they were a fraction of a second earlier. Bloop! An oropendula throws my soul into the sun, where it swims for a moment before returning to my tall, gangly body. The jungle is chuming, hallucinating forms, textures, oddities. Why else would butterflies have eyes on their wings? The cosmos is a flower in my mother's garden. The jungle is panting like a dog. It lies in the shade, half dreaming, emitting Nezahualcoyotlian vibrations, flooding the author's mind with words. He drinks the reflection of his face in black coffee, savors the bitter alkaloid of memory, and continues to write his endless poem, which includes, now, an achiote pod with an applicator stick, left on the table after Rufino painted the faces of the tourists from Quebec this morning before their hike. The best face paintings here are done with a long, straight sliver of palm wood rubbed in achiote. This prints perfectly straight red lines, which can be developed into geometrical designs. In the old days, the sequoias used to pluck out their eyebrows because only animals having hair on their faces, as Joaquin says, and also, I think, to increase the paintable surface. Back then, if you made it through a yahe ceremony with your face paint intact, people who saw you at dawn would know you had maintained your control during the intoxication. It would be a demonstration of your mastery. Less advanced drinkers forget about their paint and smudge it. Even something as simple as scratching your nose smears achiote. Only animals having hair on their faces. Rufino told me once that the Sequoia term for white people, anke, means eater, as in anke sewe paint, the eater bearded people, glossed as bearded cannibals, a recollection of problems with Spaniards several centuries back. Some Spaniards resorted to eating human flesh once or several times. Serafin Piahuahe's book Medicine Root says that when the missionaries came, Joaquin told the other Sequoias, "These are the people our grandparents warned us about." To the Barclays themselves, Joaquin shouted, "Hit the road, you cannibals!" The Barclays retreated to Quito but came back 6 months later. Reclining in the nylon hammock underneath untranslatable oropendula messages in the shade of Supernatura, I pass a little time in the jungle before it disappears. The sound of a motorboat approaches from downriver. Big marigolds are blooming near the path to the outhouse. White clouds above and beyond the opposite bank of the river watch everything impassively, getting really bored. Here comes that boat, louder and louder. It appears, bearing a colonist, motorist, and a young puntero, guy who sits at the front and watches for obstacles in the water, and a load of wood. The motorist didn't wave back at me when I waved, then looked away when I nodded at him. There's no rule about whether you wave at someone on the river. Sometimes you feel like it, sometimes you don't. I didn't like him staring at me, so I nodded at him and he looked away, embarrassed. It's unusual to see a white man in a green tunic. A woodpecker's tuck, tuck, tuck in the background, finding grubs in a tree. As I search beyond the surface of my environment to find something to write, I lanced my infection, but only got out a little pus. It'll have to run its course. Up in Mexico, when Franco wondered if he should puke, Alberto said, sometimes it's better just to let the body deal with it. One majestic white cloud is triumphant in the blue sky realm, the body of God rearing up and watching over the earth. It's a sweet summer day, this January 6th. We're in one of the two dry seasons for which the Sequoias have adopted the Spanish term verano, summer. This one encompasses January and February, and the other is August through October. Summer is defined as when it rains less. I've finished the Yahe crown I started last year, wrapping my long strand of beads 7 times around the hoop of cocowasi wood and tying it in place. Katia came over with Macias and Miguelito to check up on me. I gave her some of my food. My beans and rice came out fine despite the lack of pot lids. Now the light of my 3 candles is yellow-orange. The white page picks up the green of my tunic. Outside, everything's black. I'm ambivalent about grad school. I'd like to settle here in Ecuador, but what then? Future fear sinks its lukewarm claws into my skin. As my ex-girlfriend Deirdre used to say, don't borrow trouble from the future. She did it herself, but at least she fought against it. Last time I saw Rufino, he raised the possibility of making me a partner in Cabaña Supernatura. I could bring in more tourists. If I stay here, I bet I could make this place pay off for me in a year or two. My bug bites are somewhat soothed by the citronella ointment I found over at the old hut today. I had 3 cups of coffee this morning to get my motor running, and I'm not tired at all. Thinking about that woman I met recently, the blue-eyed, milk-skinned one with the bat-like beauty and the curiosity about telepathy. Po'oyo would be her Sequoia name, White Bat. I feel like a frayed nerve ending. Some insects just bit my feet, and the right side of my head hurts. It's okay, it's not too bad. Monkeys in the trees, oh geez. A celebratory rustling as they advance, and curious chirps, wondering why the hut is lit at this hour of the night. Finally got to sleep last night, only to wake again at midnight. Sterilized the infection with Neosporin and cut into it again with the small blade of my Swiss Army knife, like a tooth of the rainbow serpent. The scalpel is the sharpest knife. Squeezed out more pus this time. Now in the hammock, my crown riding lightly on my head. Cicadas chant, possessed by Wiwati, the growth spirit. They're his voice. Insects are shamans too. I'm growing emotionally just thinking about this. An Argo Tours speedboat thunders upriver toward Chiritza to collect a fresh group of rich people. The waves crash against the riverbank. Argo Tours has a posh riverboat, and they host wild cocaine-fueled parties on it. Nobody around here likes them because the waves from their speedboats could overturn a child's canoe. Humming a tune for the rainbow serpent, I planted a few yahe vines, then hauled boards to make a platform on top of the outhouse pit I dug a few months ago. It's a lovely day in the jungle. The day after tomorrow, I'll catch a ride upriver with Rufino and his tourists. The tourists are headed to Quito and then Quebec. I'm going to San Pablo to teach English to the kids. Amazing how much better I feel with this infection lanced. I'd like to do that with all my problems. Slice them open. Squeeze them out. The scalpel is the kindest knife.
One,
Good morning. It's me. Can you hear me?
You are listening to Nighttime Daydreams with DJ Talon K on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on and then tune in and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more, and more, and more, and more.
Sphinx Wolf Cactus Tree of Life. Joaquin and Maribo have arrived from Baños with a guest, Jim Timothy, a peyote eater Dave told me about a while back, a participant in the Native American Church. Jim is living in Baños. Last year, he went on one of Dave's tours, bearing the urn of the ashes of a friend who had died of AIDS and had wanted to be sprinkled in the Amazon jungle. An unusual but somehow typical outsider faux pas. Dave told Jim, "What? You can't just dispose of a corpse here. This is people's land." As a compromise, the ashes ended up getting poured into the Aguarico River. I'm off to the Sequoia village of San Pablo soon. I'll teach at the middle school for a week, January 20th to January 24th, then after the school's break from March 24th to June 13th. At 42, Jim is slim and fit. He told me he could dance as many hours as boyfriends half his age. He said he was an urban shaman and an organizer of spiritual rave parties in the Bay Area. "We have a chill-out room where there are always people on ecstasy having mellow conversations and giving each other back rubs. It's better than having them out on the street drinking and fighting." People on ecstasy giving each other back rubs reminded me of, and I told him, my dream of the Natural History Museum diorama of ducks and platypuses at their yearly subterranean gene exchange. He replied with a Natural History Museum dream of his own. "I was in a dim corridor in the Egyptian section. Ahead of me was a diorama with a sphinx in it. She was alive, looking out at me through the glass. When our eyes met, I realized I was myself and her at the same time. But more her, because the eye that's Jim was an emanation of her, her avatar, one of many avatars. With her, we formed a multiple-bodied superorganism. One of our roles was to bring information to her, to this greater version of ourselves." That's what I was doing in the Egyptian section of the museum, channeling my experiences to her and getting energy back through her from this network of selves. Jim suddenly sighed. "I was smoking a lot of DMT in those days, going deep into these questions of identity and reality. I had visitation rites with my son. He lived with my ex-wife. He got in trouble in school. I realized he needed my attention. That and the Sphinx dream was when I started dialing back on the DMT. I needed to journey outside myself, not inside. I brought my son with me to the community garden. I taught him everything I knew about plants. We learned the plants side by side. Every plant is a teacher plant. They all teach about life. A few teach about good and evil. I think you're like me, always up for big questions," Jim went on. "You like this.
When I was a kid, I went to Catholic school, so good and evil was a hot topic. One day I asked the priest, "We're supposed to love our enemies, right?" The priest said, "Yes." I was like, "And the devil's our enemy, right? So we're supposed to love the devil, right?" The priest got really mad, but he couldn't answer me. He just said I needed to pray more. I said, "And then you grew up and took peyote and all the religious contradictions resolved." Jim said, "Ah, peyote, is it time to talk about that? It's taken me beyond the contradictions and into some adventures of the mind and body. First time I took it, I was way out in the desert on an Indian reservation in the Southwest. I was alone, tripping, naked, and playing a drum. Saw a little cloud of dust in the distance. It got bigger, bigger. I saw it was from an approaching car. The car got closer and closer. I saw it was one of the tribal police cars. It pulled up near me and stopped. A big Indian cop wearing mirrored sunglasses climbed out, walked up to me real slow, and said, 'You know you can't do this.' I said, 'Yes.' He said, 'All right.' Then he turned around, got back in his car, and drove away. I said, 'I was around Huichols in Mexico who took peyote. A couple of them told me about it. One said that peyote was the first plant, and corn was born from it, and humans were born from the corn. According to that myth, the peyote is a grandparent of humanity.' Another Huichol myth I read says, 'Peyote and corn and deer are all different forms of each other.' Myths are like computer chips," Jim said. "They compress a lot of information in a small space. Concentrated intelligence. Survival pills for hard times." I said, "One of my creative writing professors gave me a book of poems by this Serbian poet, Vasco Popa, called Homage to the Lame Wolf. It was named after an old Serbian tribal god. My roommate went to bed early. I went into this walk-in closet we had with a big soft chair in it, opened the window, got stoned out of my mind, and read these poems. They rocked my world because apart from being stunningly good poetry, they were also mythic prayers to this pagan god who was listening with his thoughts as I was reading the words. Have you ever had that experience where you're reading a book and the words open out into this huge other space? Like it's as big inside the book as outside it? Next day, I went to my professor and told him I had discovered the poems were prayers to this animal god, this ancient immortal wolf spirit. He leaned back in his chair, looked down his long nose at me, and said, 'Vasco Popa knows a lot about wolves.' I said, 'Like what?' He said, 'And his grandfather knew even more.' Sorry, his grandmother knew even more. I said, 'Like what?' He said, 'How to make love to them.'" Jim said, "There's a guy I know in California. I don't know him well personally. We have a friend in common. The guy works at an aquarium. They released one of their male sea lions back into the ocean. This guy drives his car to the beach every Friday and picks up the sea lion and takes him home. He keeps him in the bathtub and feeds him fish, and they make love. On Sunday, he drives him back to the ocean." "I was never sexually attracted to animals myself," I commented, suddenly feeling out of my depth. "Me neither," Jim said. "I like the idea of mixing human and animal modalities, just not that way. A few years ago, I danced at the Gay Pride March in San Francisco, dressed as a deer. I was in black motorcycle boots and a G-string and a headdress with antlers. There was a group of beautiful black women at the edge of the street, and they were cheering for me. I danced for them. They loved me. Far out, and the deer brings us back to its alter ego, the peyote, I said. I wanted to steer the conversation away from sex. This Native American guy I met in Mexico, Jamie Bear, he fought on the Wounded Knee Rebellion back in 1973. He does peyote ceremonies with Leonard Crowdog. He told me the teepee was the world's first spaceship. You can fly anywhere in the universe with it. I can see that, Jim said. It does look a lot like the nose cone of a rocket. I guess the whole tradition would correspond to the rest of the rocket underneath, the part that provides the power. I had a different vision of the teepee during a Native American church ceremony. I looked up from the fire at the poles that support the canvas. And each pole was a different religion or philosophy. One was Islam, another Christianity, then Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, atheism, Native American, European, pagan, and so on. All of them were necessary to shelter humanity. All of them were equal. At twilight, Joaquin poured for himself, Jim, and me, chanting his wobbly chant over cups of yahe. We all drank and settled into hammocks and relaxed. For a long time, we were quiet, listening to insects chittering and tweeting, night birds fluting and oboeing, frogs honking and groaning, a thrilling music of weirdness. My mood oscillated between scrumptious misery and grumpy joy. Ah, now, shit begins to sparkle. My mind takes off like a teepee rocket, crash lands on a planet of fragrant, burnt language where gibberish and gobbledygook murmur in the breeze. Yahe is not a bug or a slug, it's a drug, but it's way more than that. It's a bat like a cat, distilled echo of gunflower, elves, subcutaneous calico lichen, vibrating neon gum, mashing itself against the molars of the mind, yellow blades of sunlight magnified by the black earth, red dreams of the one light, shaking us gently in the midnight morning, saying, hey, old friend, wake up. It's time to be, buddy, time to be. Be, 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 I vocalize, the verb reverberating from my lips. A memory swims up from my junior year in college. High as fuck, I'm lying on my back with my feet in the air beneath a maple tree in October, walking in the blue Ohio sky below the Vibram soles of my leather Patagonia hiking boots. Intermittent cold breeze shaking down yellow, red, orange leaves that spin as they fall. My tree is showing me. It's a nature clock that tells the time of the season. Each leaf that falls is another season second. What are the ramifications? Rama, Rama. Last thing Gandhi said as he was being assassinated. A Sanskrit name of God, same as the Spanish word for the branch of a tree. Branches, branch into branch, branching branches, life a biofractal. What are the ramifications, Rama? Let's all ramify. One, two, three, choom! Crouching like a squirrel on a twig of the world tree, I peer at a leaf. Leaf grows scales, surroundings dissolve. I'm in a workshop, looking at a sheet of lizard skin. gnomes cutting into it with instruments like cookie cutters, taking out lizard shapes, sewing them on lizard bodies. Of course, lizards come into being through biological reproduction. Even in trance, I know that, but the natural process is mirrored by this supernatural one. This is how they craft lizards. The scene winks out, and I'm listening to insect songs in a hammock in the dark jungle again as I ramify, fingers and toes lengthening, branching out, lengthening, branching out. In the night outside the hut, trees whisper in the wind, "We'll hide you because you're one of us." Joaquin is quietly snoring. Should I turn charlatan and seek wealth, selling fake wisdom, now that I know everything's fabricated? But then, even my wealth would be fake. Sun, moon, stars, all artificial, built like a movie set by elves to convince us this so-called reality is real. It's built by the elves of Maya, by Maya's elves, by Maya's elves. One finds oneself, many finds many self, wallowing in the meistic miasma of cells and selves that is the mind on Yahe again. We're in one of those places where everything one thinks of is true, completely, undeniably, yet elsewhere it could be false. Truths, like countries, have borders. Here, the magic universe is vast and real. Elsewhere, other rules apply. And always, crickets are singing, and my lungs drinking this rich, clean air, like a distillation of life itself. As much as Yahe, I'm drunk on this language of nature breathing in me, this plant-animal voice roaring with piping rustlings, creaking, whimpering squawks, cackling, murmuring hums. Lame wolf, your growl chitters in cricket's song. My hands are the heads of your scouts. My feet are your mangled paws. My muzzle lengthens, the better to smell the jungle with. Lame wolf, are we alpha or omega? Venom or nectar? Cherub or sphinx? Are we death or life? Nausea hits me, a punch in the belly from the idea of a wolf-headed man. Then self-pity, as I remember I'll die someday. Then compassion, as I remember everyone else will too. With wolf tears in my eyes, I resign myself to death and to fear and pain, death's foreshadowers. A breeze brings the cool brown smell of river. Crickets play their wordless songs of light and darkness with more intensity now, and I'm not sure where the music's coming from, but it reverberates me until it's all I am. I stretch and shift, wolfish, relieving a pressure in my back, crack my dead knuckles, and float again in the delicate black water of the forest night, my head clear. I accept the nausea as I accept everything. I must, and I can. I sail toward the center of night, the captain of a schooner riding atop a plume of smoke high above a burning city. The captain is cold. He pulls the light blanket up around his shoulders. I remember Jim and Joaquin. What are they doing? Joaquin visiting the dead in a dream. Jim telepathing with his overself. Go slow, my soul. My stomach is giddy with the taste of death that is also the taste of life. Joaquin quietly snoring again. An early explorer wrote about Yahe. Transported by the drink, the Indians dreamed a thousand absurdities and believed them as if they were true. Ah, indeed, how believable these thousand absurdities are, my exploratory friend. It's so easy to be transported by them, and so fun, like you never knew you were a schooner, and the absurd wind rises, and off you sail. We drink a thousand truths and believe them as if they were dreams. We dream the myths of man and the oppositions we learn when we're dreamed into this world, Alpha and Omega, Venom and Nectar, Cherub and Sphinx, Death and Life. Surrounded by these phantoms, we stare about wildly, but we're more than our frightened, amazed selves. Like Gandhi, we're ramifications of Rama, pulses beating, lungs resting oxygen from air, branches of the human plant. The gnomes march away in the darkness, carrying their tools. The drink transports me into a memory. Dusk, July 4th, 1974. I'm six. My mom and stepdad are bringing me to a firework display in Veterans Park in Ann Arbor. Threading through a crowd of families and couples lying on blankets, they greet our next-door neighbor, Olga, then move on. My mom says, "She's high as a kite." My stepdad nods. Olga's sitting on the ground, but my mom said she's up in the air. Adults often say things that don't mean what they say. What are they talking about now? Maybe by the time I'm 10, I'll know. I think I'll know a lot more when I'm 10. We reach an open space. On the grass, my mom spreads the soft second-hand quilt on which old automobiles are printed. In the fading light, I read their names. Model T Ford, Oldsmobile Cutlass, Dodge Dart. I lie on my back and picture Olga flying above me, trailing a kite string. The sky is an inky sapphire. Night doesn't so much fall as creep in with tiny steps. The first stars are starlets peeping through the gap in the curtains on opening night. Then, tremendous, deep boom and echo in the velvet summer sky. Whistling, screaming, yellow-white firework spirals as it falls. Huge, green, plant-like one detonates and holds still in the high air with its smoke lit up by its fire. Blue, star-like one flares like a love note from outer space. And we remember our country's fiery birth. Lying on 300 blankets, we Americans cry out, "Ooh! Ah!" "22 years later, I breathe deep, living in two times, savoring that glory that marked my soul." Nausea. Eagles whirl, arrows and olive branches, stars and stripes, all part of my design, were woven into each other. Nausea jacks up the beauty of my visions. Bug-eyed, I stare into the maelstrom, the soul of my country. My eyes stream with tears. red, white, and blue. My fellow American Jim Timothy's voice rings out in the darkness. The Creator is our Savior, hey, nay, yo, way. The Creator is our Savior, hey, nay, yo, way. Take care of us, take care of us, hey, nay, yo, way. Take care of us, take care of us, hey, nay, yo, way. Take pity on us, take pity on us, hey, nay, yo, way. Take pity on us, take pity on us, hey, nay, yo, way. The Creator is our Savior, hey, nay, yo, way. The Creator is our Savior, hey, nay, yo, way. The family tree of humanity is ramifying before my eyes with astonishment. All living humans are the tips of its twigs. I see myself there, and the growing seems to keep going through me, beyond me. I recall this is one of the answers I've been looking for. The intoxication intensifies. Time distorts, flexes, breathes, congeals, melts away. The jungle is forever, and I'm any being at all witnessing it. Personal identity, ethnicity, species, irrelevant. We're gathered here from all times, witnessing this never-ending dance of life. Joaquin wakes up. He and Jim and I sing songs of praise and renewal with power and precision in the multicolored night that soothes as it seethes with intelligence and love. I know we'll always be here doing this, even when we come down. Even when we die.
देखिए मिले उसमें सीधी सी बात है कि कविता जो है ना एक हादसे से पैदा नहीं होती है। कुछ लोगों का ख्याल है कि शायद कविता मोहब्बत से पैदा होती है। कुछ लोगों का ख्याल है कि कविता फ्रस्ट्रेशन हो जिंदगी में उदासी हो तब पैदा होती है। लेकिन मेरा ख्याल है कि मेरे जो कविता पैदा हुई उसमें सब कुछ सबसे पहले वहाँ हिंदुस्तान जिंदगी में बात है वो है कि वहाँ क्लासेस एक श्रेणियाँ बटी हुई उनमें कोई लोअर मिडिल क्लास का है कोई मिडिल क्लास का है उनका दुकान हर आदमी हर बाप हर माँ एक जुए की तरह उसको पढ़ाती है या पढ़ाते हैं और 10 साल के बाद वो सोचते हैं कि इसकी मुझे रिटर्न वापसी मिलेगी तो मेरे बाप मेरे तहसीलदार थे उनका भी एक ख्याल था और मुझे नहीं पता कि मैं शायद काहे को
ठेस लगी हो आपको
काहे की ठेस
क्योंकि बहुत सारे शायर ऐसे हैं जिन्होंने शायरी की है कविता लिखी है नाउ दुखी हो कभी
जिंदगी में
दुख पाया
ऐसा नहीं था ना तो मोहब्बत का फर्क रहा हजारों औरतें जिंदगी में आई उनको स्वीकार भी किया ऐसी क्या ऐसी क्या मुझे कोई दुख नहीं मोहब्बत का किसी बात का जितनी शायद मुझे मोहब्बत मिली है पंजाब के किसी शायर को
तो आपने किसी चीज से किसी व्यक्ति से किसी तस्वीर से प्यार किया
वो तस्वीर बनी कभी बालों से किसी के किसी उंगली से किसी के होंठों से किसी के पैरों से
तो जाहिर है कि आपने रोमांटिक कविता भी लिखी
होगी पहले तो सारी रोमांटिक है
एक आध हमको भी सुना
छोटा कि पुछदे ओ हाल फकीरा साडा छुड़े
आजकल जो भारत की स्थिति है, भारत की हालत है, कभी 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 भागना चाहता है, कभी कभी फरार चाहता है, जिंदगी से फरार चाहता है, वातावरण वातावरण फरार चाहता है, भागना चाहता है, छुपना चाहता है, अपने आप को ढकना चाहता है। ऐसी स्थिति आपको आजकल भारत में मिलती है? कभी आप
अपने आप से दुनिया से
भला क्यों
क्या है जिंदगी ख्याल है कि हम सब लोग एक वो स्लो से है, वो एक 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 आराम से मौत मर रहे हैं। और वही बात है, और ये हर इंटेलेक्चुअल के साथ होगा, जो भी बौद्धिक है उसके साथ ये तो दुखांत रहेगा, वो मर रहा है हर पल। मेरा ख्याल जवाब पूरा था करने करने करने
याद